Howdy, folks. Welcome to the Newsprint Commando. I'm your host, Ed Moore. For those of you new to the show, Newsprint Commando is where I talk about mainly 70s and 80s independent books. This season, we're talking about the UK Harris Company's book, Red Fox, Aracel's Samurai, and those books put out by Pacific Comics. Today, it is Pacific Comics Captain Victory issue number 4 that came out in January of 1982 and was the only book that Pacific put out that month. Now, if you want to get in touch, you can tweet me at either Teal Productions, Teal is in the color, or the News P Commando. Teal Productions has a Facebook page. I am IndieMan at gmail.com is the email address. comicbooknoise.com/TNP, Tango November Charlie. I said P, didn't I? C, Tango November Charlie. And forums at justanotherfanboy.freeforums.net. Two stories in the book, 25 pages is the first, 4 pages is the second, although the second in some ways was a little bit more entertaining. Both stories were scripted and penciled by Mr. Jack Kirby, inked and lettered by Mike Thibodeau, and colored by Steve Olaf. Starting off, I've got the book here looking at the cover. At the top, we're told they've never fought invaders from space, but they wouldn't stop the fighting airborne. In defense of our galaxy, which fighting airborne are the U.S. soldiers here on Earth. Then the cover goes on, in defense of our galaxy, Captain Victory and the Galactic Rangers, and we have an image of a hive that we saw our forces for good penetrate in the previous issue, issue 3. I talked about that, I don't know, what is it, two, three episodes ago? One of the airborne, probably the commander, we don't see any insignia here, but I believe he's the commander. Start talking, spaceman. What is this place? Captain Victory tells us, the place of a powerful and undaunted enemy. And then Captain Victory's second-in-command, Clavis, comes in with, what the captain means is that they're experts at inflicting sudden death. And then here, in a diagonal banner at the lower left-hand corner, we have Kirby backup feature. Are you ready for the Goozlebobber? G-O-O-Z-L-E-B-O-B-B-E-R, one word, Goozlebobber. Interesting name. Inside front cover, full-color comics, Neil Adams' Ms. Mystic, coming in 1982, origin issue. Now, we've already had a short story for Ms. Mystic. I believe it was last episode. That was the Rocketeer. The episode before that? Yeah. Where I talked about Captain Victory issue number 2. There was a Ms. Mystic short story in that. That was episode 33 of the show. I don't have the dates handy, I don't think. Let's see if I can get it quickly here for you without making you wait. February 14th, I believe, is when I dropped that episode. So that was a Ms. Mystic. But then in about 10 episodes from now, looks like I have scheduled to talk about the full Ms. Mystic comic that Pacific puts out. Off the top of my head, and the top of my head is not quite as sharp as it used to be, but I believe that may be the only issue of Ms. Mystic that came out from Pacific Comics. Again, looking here quickly through some preliminary notes. Yeah, I believe that's the only issue. I don't know if it was before. Sorry, guys, this is a slight aside from Captain Victory. I'll get back to Captain Victory, I promise. I'm holding it in here in my hand, so I definitely won't forget. Ms. Mystic, I believe Neil Adams, I'm not sure if he wasn't able to get another issue out before Pacific went under, or if he just pulled it back into his own publishing company, I believe, which was Continuity. And because I know later on, through Continuity, Ms. Mystic came out. I'm not sure what the relationship between he and Continuity and he and Pacific were in 1982 when that first issue came out. But regardless, we have an ad for that first issue. It's going to be the only issue from Pacific. Our comic starts at the top page here. Time, now, place, inside a cave-like geometric construction, a great hive which will eventually engulf all of Earth. The players, Captain Victory and his Galactic Rangers, plus the fighting airborne. And I use different intonations because the fonts, size, and colors and styles are different for these things to, you know, to separate them and to try to give some sort of textual excitement. textural excitement to the text. Hopefully you know what I mean. I know what I mean. I'm just not getting it across very well. Captain Victory, his second in command, Clavis, and then a airborne trooper, similar to what's on the front cover, but the front cover is a little bit more detailed. But we see the three of them. The airborne trooper is exclaiming, "Good Lord, here they come. What are they?" And Captain Victory says, "Insectans give their own answers." And Clavis says, "Don't talk, just fight." Very, very curvy faces here. Captain Victory is a lighter shaded skin tone, blonde-haired man. Clavis is a close-cut hair, darker-skinned man. Without offending anybody, I believe that he was trying to get across the fact that this race was, or the member of this race was black, I think is what he was trying to do. Because this is, I'll just say it rather than trying to preface it. The book has a lot of alien races, both humanoid and not humanoid. Very different across the spectrum, colors, styles of body shape and form and skin color. And so Kirby just let loose with they're alien, so they can look like anything. Some of the races, particularly it seems those in the upper echelons of command, are very humanoid. So, you know, you get the impression of white people and black people and other colors. Perhaps there's an Asian, a Middle Eastern. Perhaps this person that I am assuming, to my eye, uneducated as it may be, as black, perhaps Jack Kirby at the time was thinking someone of a more Middle Eastern persuasion. You know, I don't know. But the skin tone to me looks like other black characters that I've seen Kirby draw, say, Marvel Comics, early 70s. So we open the next page. The first two-page spread of the book is a two-page spread of Insectons, with one in the lead yelling out, "Kill the intruders, defend the hive." And there are, I don't know, 8 or 10 Insectons here in various poses across the two pages. They seem to be a race that wears armor, because later on this leader, as you look into his face, I don't know, he or she, as it is attacking Captain Victory, you can see that the face is inset into what appears to be a large helmet that makes it look more insectoid than what just this creature itself does. So I get the impression a little bit later on, but here also, that a lot of the Insectons' gravitas of how horrid they look is because they are wearing external equipment, armors and weapons and things of that nature. But this two-page spread is just so very Kirby. It's Jack Kirby 100%. Awesome, awesome image. So the airborne jump to it first, as they are, I suppose, in this book anyways, trained to do. And Captain Victory and Clavis are kind of arguing about... Captain Victory wants to help the Earthmen because he knows the Insectans will just completely wipe them out. Earth weapons and defenses, they can't compare. Well, Clavis is of the opinion, hey, dog, if they want to jump in there and do something, let them jump in there and do it. Yeah, they're going to die, but so what? You know, they're protecting their planet, and just let them go. And Captain Victory is determined to help. Well, in the midst of this discussion, nay, argument, a blast knocks Victory and Clavis both down, and they are immediately beset upon by the other Insectons, having blown through the four guard of the airborne Earthlings. They have now reached the second level of the defenders, I guess, although they were the attackers, but they're defending now, which is the Galactic Rangers and all of the aliens that are there. Just kind of chilling because Captain Victory hasn't told them to do anything. Well, as he is waylaid by the Insectan that was the lead jumping out on that two-page spread, Clavis does something that we haven't seen here before. He speaks to us and tells us, "My species from the star Antares is born with a natural novelty the Insectans haven't heard of." Panel. Next panel. this is that panel is just a talking head of Clavis. Now the next panel is this whirlwind of energy that is obscuring the face, but you can still see that there is a head in this armored suit, which is what Clavis was wearing. He finishes his thought. Let's see how they handle cyclotronic conversion. The cyclotronic process expands with great swiftness. Panel. Next panel. Then the conversion flash occurs. Next panel. Major Clavis is suddenly gone, and in his place stands a spirit brother, that which can be called upon by Clavis's kind, a living power that will act for its kin. The odds are truly great. He places the helmet back on his body as he had taken it off to speak unobstructed to Captain Victory. But not overwhelming. Come, Insectans, let each of us see how we fare. And the Insectan that he's approaching says, I've yet to see food outlive the dinner. Right? D-I-N-N-E-R is dinner. I'm assuming I have yet to see the food outlive the diner, maybe? One who is dining, diner. One who is dinnering, dinner. That doesn't make sense to me. So I've yet to see food outlive the dinner. So, curious there. And so Clavis has become metallic. M-E-T-A-L-L-A-C. And we're told when the metallic attacks, he crashes into the Insectans like a mace of death. He stops their forward rush and sends them reeling. And so now we have several panels of metallic attacking the Insectans by himself and making his way through them, crushing them, throwing them, beating them. He is the last. A few have fled. My work is done. Release me, spirit brother. And then we see Voosh. That was great work, Clavis. Who did you invoke this time? A metallic. That was Captain Victory asking him. And then the Clavis flips back a little bit the helmet that he's wearing. On my planet, they're known to be heavy hitters. So I guess that process, let's flip back here, see what it was called, the cyclotronic conversion allows him to change his body form, body type. He remained in the armor, and the armor never did anything. It's not like the armor broke because his body was big or, you know, he didn't shrink or anything. So I'm assuming that his body form must have changed in that armor. Can't really see because first he's talking with the helmet off. Then we see the cyclotronic conversion. Then he has turned away from us as he is placing the helmet back on and seating it. We can't really see anything about his body form because of the way that's drawn. And then the next panel, we see that armored body just attack. We have no idea what it looks like inside. For all we know, it could have been converted all to energy. I don't know. But so that's interesting. Clavis can change forms. Then Captain Victory and Major Clavis inspect the chamber where the Earth troops crashed with the Insectans. Clavis is bending down looking over one of the troops. It was a massacre. The natives here have no knowledge of galactic battle. I apologize. I said there were multiple lines. The only galactic rangers here apparently are Clavis and Captain Victory. The rest were just the human soldiers. So all of the human soldiers are now dead inside this hive, and Clavis and Captain Victory are all that remain. We head outside. We see several scenes. They've closed off the roads leading into Spartanville. There's a sign here that tells us that's the name of the town. Plus, they show us some things that are happening on a map, the Galactic Rangers do, and we see that it's Spartanville that they are outside. Soldiers are rerouting traffic. One of the cars says, well, I was, you know, trying to visit somebody that I know in Spartanville. And the soldier says, sorry, ma'am, please keep moving. So, okay. Then we focus more in on the soldiers in town as a one-star general is talking to whomever is in charge in situ. And then we see them move on to the hive, which is this cluster of oddly shaped, very angular, rocky protrusions from the hill, almost like they have either built something out of the earth or converted portions of the earth's material into these really angular, blocky kind of shapes all over the place with an entrance. And then once you go inside, the entire entirety of what you see is this sharply angular kind of thing. Like, you know, when we would tunnel through the earth, there would be some semblance of shape and some type of almost smoothing as we bore through or dig through or whatever have you, we being humans. But these aliens, they make it very, I guess the idea is to make it very alien looking, and it works. Several of the Galactic Rangers, one might be Orca. Is that, let's see, bear with me, flip. Orca, and one might be Harris, I believe, H-E-R-A-S, Harris, speaking to the general that just came up, the One Star, and he doesn't believe in aliens, but he sees these freaky people, and the freaky people are trying to tell him what's going on, so there's an oddness to the exchange there. Harris calls down a map from the ship that is cloaked, that is the base for the Galactic Rangers, and it's a holographic map, and it shows us Spartanville, and the Insectans are attempting to tunnel to the nearest large population center, which is Philadelphia. They take humans, and through whatever process, they convert them into Insectons. So that's how they build their numbers, is by converting the indigenous race of the planet that they are trying to conquer into creatures like them that, in turn, the Lightning Lady, apparently, can command. Now, right now, I'm not too sure what's going on with the Insectans, because Lightning Lady is captive on the Galactic Ranger ship, as per last issue. We see her again here in a little bit. So, where the Insectons are getting their orders, what even they're necessarily about doing right now, I don't know, because we don't go into it. The only time that we really saw what was going on with them, the focus was on Lightning Lady. And then because she led them, we also saw what was going on with the Insectans. So we have the map, seeing that ultimately the Insectans are going to Philadelphia. The humans, oh my, what can we do? The Galactic Rangers tell them, well, you know, we'll help. We need to go back, because, again, now we see that there are more Rangers, because, as I said, Orca and Harris and maybe a couple other guys here, it looks like. But after this little exchange with the soldiers, Clavis and Captain Victory beam back up to the ship, and we have three panels of the teleportation beams and some cool, freaky sci-fi kind of artwork there. Captain Victory then excuses himself. He puts Clavis in command, tells him, you've got the con. No, that's not what he tells him. In essence, it is. What does he tell him? You've got the ship, Clavis. There it is. I've got the impossible to do. Talk sense to an Insector. And he's going to go talk to Lightning Lady. Several panels moving through the ship. He gets to the brig. And as the door to the brig opens, Lightning Lady reaches out, grabs Captain Victory, and yanks her into the room with him. We then have a page of letters here. Nobody that I recognize. Well, here, I'm sorry. Mike Barron from Middleton, Wisconsin, which is cool. We know Mike Barron. And I believe Middleton, Wisconsin, is that where Westfield Comics is located? Might be. Middleton sounds familiar. Thanks, Mike. We hereby recommend that you check out Nexus at the direct sales outlets that carry Captain Victory, is the response. In the letter, I'm excited about the new Neil Adams strip. Who isn't? Mike Barron writes, your product is particularly important to me because of our own Nexus, which I'm sure you'll see soon enough. Capital Pubs is giving us a shot here out in the frozen Midwest. I did speak about the first volume and several issues of the second volume of Nexus last season for the show. I believe that might have been where I even started Newsprint Commando, was talking about Nexus number one. I believe. Last season, if you go all the way back to the beginning of last year, I spoke on all the books put out by Capital Comics. This season, and probably a lot of next season, I have chosen in part to talk about all of the books put out by Pacific Comics. And so that's where I'm at now. I'm at January 1982 release date, and this is the book that was released. Next page is a advert for Star Slayer, Log of the Jolly Roger, Full Color Comics. And I believe coming up with that should be issue number two. Yeah, I talked about issue number one a couple weeks ago, or a couple episodes ago. Not weeks, a little longer than a couple weeks. Then we get to the confrontation between Lightning Lady and Captain Victory. fight back and forth. She is gaining power as the connection between her and the Insectons were kind of severed because she was taken away from them. But that connection has been reestablished. And as the Insectons grow in number, she feeds, but not to their detriment per se, but she feeds off of the numbers of followers that she has. And so the more followers she has, the stronger she gets. So at this point, she is probably about as strong as she has been since Captain Victory has encountered her in this book, this series, I mean. They're fighting back and forth a little bit, but then suddenly she draws back and clasps at her throat and says, another mind probing my own, a strange, powerful human vermin. You've got a telepath aboard your ship. It's that egghead. He's somewhere outside this room. Damn him, he's also a transporter, a teleporter. Captain Victory says she's becoming smaller. She's vanishing. And then the door to the brig opens, and outside is, he calls him Egghead, but I believe that he was named Mr. Mind in a previous issue, whichever you want to use. Egghead is not in parentheses. I mean, it could be he's being unkind by using the word Egghead. There are several times in this book that Captain Victory, I guess in an attempt, Kirby was trying to make him, make several of the characters now and relatable and maybe even, dare I say, hip. Ugh, that just bugs me to even say that word. And the text that they use, the way they speak in some places is just really offbeat, I think, for a higher brow sci-fi kind of book. So it's an interesting mix to read what they're saying, but then to look at the pictures and grasp the overall story. The two don't necessarily mix in a panel-to-panel way. Overall, I mean, it's not that bad for the whole book. It doesn't, like, take you out of the story, I don't think, badly enough. But for, you know, a single panel at a time here and there, it's like, why are you talking like that? That's just weird. So yeah, there's an exchange between Mr. Mind and Captain Victory. Apparently, Mr. Mind acted on his own and sent her to another time, another universe, another dimension. Take your pick, Captain. So he just teleported her away. I mean, yeah, because Mr. Mind felt that Captain Victory was losing that particular battle. Ultimately, as the punishment for doing that without orders, Captain Victory grants Mr. Mind official commission in the Galactic Rangers. Yeah, you heard that. To punish him, he makes him an official Galactic Ranger. Not sure about that. Because that's ultimately what Mr. Mind wanted. He's just one of the many aliens aboard this ship that they took in earlier, issue one maybe. And he's been doing things for the Galactic Rangers unsanctioned and without being asked. But they've been helpful, beneficial, you know, what have you. And so finally, we have seen previously that he's doing that to try to get in the Galactic Rangers' good graces. Hopefully, he's not going to turn around and do them dirty somehow. But so far, it hasn't seemed to. He's a very self-centered kind of person, and he wants what he wants. Mr. Mind, that is. And so, selfishness, but it's not been anything to the detriment of Captain Victory or the Galactic Rangers so far. So we move on until we go to the science section, and we see that the Master Designer, who is a definite reptilian type race, is working on this huge, it is 3 to 5 stories tall compared to Captain Victory, difference in size. So that's what, 30, 40, 50 feet tall, something like that. That sounds about right. Another Kirby creation. It looks like, you know, people ride in the head and I guess command this thing, but it's got this huge backpack that curves up and over its head, and then it's connected by tubules to the top of the head, and then coming off the chest and going down the front of the body is another huge device, maybe some sort of transportation device, like some kind of air sled or something like that. So it's just this massive, big weapon of some sort. The Master's Designer says, I know that we've reached the crisis stage. This machine will be ready when it's needed. And that is in response to the urgency is growing, Master Designer, from Captain Victory. although Master's designer tells him, "Don't ride that machine, Captain. Let the insectans take this crummy bunch." That is something that has been repeated by several members of the crew, you know, that they don't want to, they don't feel that it's worth trying to save Earth. Instead, just let the insectans have the planet and everybody move on to the next beachhead to try to defeat them. I don't know. I guess maybe because we're not as technologically advanced, so we're a backwater to them, and they're just like, yeah, whatever. You know, I think that's the same way that a lot of people think about indigenous tribes in less explored parts of, you know, Africa and Central and South America and what have you. Next issue, our backs to the wall. "This is it, Captain. The battle for Earth is on," says Harris as he's leading both Galactic Rangers and Airborne Troopers in a one-page fight scene against insectans. "And now for a special King Kirby treat, a surprise spinoff you'll want to follow in every issue." Even as all eyes are riveted upon the emotion-charged field of action, little attention is given to the lesser places in the galactic dreadnought Tiger, who in this moment of crisis would give a second thought to a life form like the Goozlebobber. And so Mr. Mind is going to whatever part of the ship. And in the next 4 or 5 pages, we are exposed to 13 more types of aliens on top of the 10 to 12 we have previously seen. Some of them are named. Now, I don't know if these are formal names of the individuals or names of the races, but we have Grummel, Zindo, Yarpalinkus, and the Goozlebobber. And then we have Mr. Mind also as one of the races. So he is going to the section of the ship, and he's taking count, taking census, and he sees that someone is missing. We go back down to Earth, where a couple of ne'er-do-wells are attempting to break into a house, and behind them, a large, horny, that's like goat horns. That's funny. Horny as a goat. Like the on top of the head, the horns, not like any kind of, you know, adulty sexual kind of horny. Protuberances all over the creature. He's kind of a varied shades of green, big horns on his head and on in the top of his head, kind of like the. So then several the occupants of the house come out to see what that noise is about, and they don't see anything because this alien is hidden. But as they are walking back upstairs to their bed, we see a little fuzzy alien with big eyes, and it's bipedal humanoid with really weird horns or hair coming off the top of his head. And it's following these people up the stairs. And then the kids, as they're laying down to try to go to sleep, see the Goozlebobber, who is a very funny looking dude with a large red protuberance at the end of his nose. And he's got largish eyes. And he's a very odd looking character not in an intimidating way. So, and I guess with the name Goozlebobber, you would want him to be scary. Inside back cover is another ad for Star Slayer, the log of the Jolly Roger, which I'll be talking about in a couple episodes there. And then the back cover is a full page drawing of Major Clavis, executive officer of the Dreadnought Tigers Tri-Command. Very colorful background, foreground, uniform that he's wearing. No hint that he can change his form or structure like we saw inside the cover. This is just a dude standing here, hands on hips, being all, you know, kind of heroic looking. And that's it. So thanks a lot, guys, for chiming in here, listening in with us, not chiming in with us. Be sure to take advantage of all the different shows for this year's JL May, as we go through the 2007 volume of The Brave and the Bold, if that interests you. You can find a list. I'm not sure if I'll put up a list, but there will be a list available on many of the podcast YouTube sites. And you can see there's 36 or 37 issues of the book, the volume, that volume. And I believe the idea is to cover all of those in the 30 days of May. So every day someone should release something talking about some portion of that. So check that out if you're so inclined. Thanks a lot for being here. Next time out, I'll be talking about Red Fox number 4 from Harris Comics. 1986, I believe. So talk to you guys then. Ciao.